The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Connecticut Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff stops by Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Duff. How are you?
Good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So I'm hearing that the House is scheduled to adjourn this week, but do you have any idea when the Senate is set to be back? I know the special session is happening sometime before the end of the month.
Yeah, we all adjourn on CNADA, which is last Wednesday at midnight. So we're going back in the special session. The Senate should be going in Tuesday, and the House should be going in Wednesday.
Okay, so the Senate's back tomorrow?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, I know that there's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the marijuana bill. I'm just curious, Senator Duff, how you've, I would be shocked if this didn't pass. I know that there needs to be a lot of discussion, it sounds like, around equity and licensing. But do you have any predictions as to how this is all going to roll out by the end of the session?
Well, I would say that in the Senate, you know, we passed the bill already during our regular session. I would expect that we'd pass the bill again in our special session. Unfortunately, because the clock ran out midnight on Wednesday, we have to now have a new bill. It's the same bill, but it's, you know, from a just from a standpoint of logistics, we have to have a new bill and then pass that again, and then has to go to the House. So I don't expect there to be any changes from the one that we passed last week in the Senate.
Okay. Now, Senator Duff, is the special session really only going to focus on marijuana, or are there other things you think will come up in the Senate?
There are two things, actually. There's the there's marijuana and also the what's called the budget implementer. So we passed the budget on time in our regular session, and that was actually bipartisan, which was great, overwhelmingly so. We have what's called a budget implementer document, which implements the budget. So, for example, if there's money in the budget for X, Y, or Z, say two positions in a Department of Social Services or something like that, or whatever it is, there needs to be backup language that implements those positions, that says what those positions are for, directs it more specifically. So that's what the budget implementer does, and that's what we'll be doing two things, marijuana and the budget implementer.
Senator Duff, do you mind actually kind of expanding on the implementer a little bit? In history, and this happens, I think, state to state, honestly, it's not just here in Connecticut, but implementers have tended to be hundreds, even sometimes over 1,000 pages.
And yeah,
a lot
could
of
be. Mm-hmm.
Sorry?
Yes, it could be. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I have heard that historically with implementers, sometimes amendments could kind of end up back in that language, meaning that things that maybe have died or didn't even get the votes that they should have gotten, or the debates, they kind of find their way back in. And what's concerning about that is there's no real time for public hearings. Legislative committees don't get to really weigh in on this. Are we going to see that with this implementer?
Well, I think you're going to see a long implementer for sure. There may be bills that are in there that do have to do with the budget. There may be some policy bills that made it through one chamber but not the other. But I don't think it'll be anything that people would have an objection to because of the fact that sometimes time runs out and proposals have gone through the way. But, is it going to be something egregious? If that's what you're insinuating, I don't think it would be.
Okay. So, again, talking to Senator Bob Duff this morning, and Senator Duff was kind of informing us that this typically happens, I guess, right, Senator?
We always have implementers, absolutely.
Okay.
Year.
So as soon as the legislative session ends, the implementer, especially for the state budget, this is like happens every single time.
Well, the goal would be to have an implementer before the session ends, but the way negotiations were on the final budget, there was no point of really rushing the implementer because then you make mistakes. So it's easier just to take a couple days extra and just call us back in the special session, because we did a special session call the night of our final night of session so that we had that tool available to us because The process is that we can have broad agreements on what's going to be in the implementer, but you have to have the attorneys write it, and you got to check it over. You got to make sure it's correct. There's an education implementer. There's human services implementers. There's general government implementers. This probably will be one big bill, which is going to be why it's going to be long. So you just don't want to rush those kind of things. You want to make sure you get them right, because we're really not supposed to be back in again until our regular session begins again next February.
Mm-hmm.
That's the part of being a part-time legislature.
So how long, Senator Duff, do you guys have to look through the implementer?
It should be they nailed down the last pieces, I believe, yesterday at some point, and so it'll hit, it'll probably be sent around at some point today.
Okay, so, but I guess how long do you have to pass that through is what I'm saying. Like, if you go through,
we go first, Senate goes first, and then when we're done, Tuesday, we'll have tomorrow to get it done, and then the House will come in Wednesday.
Okay, so you guys have a day to look through hundreds of pages? Like, nothing's going to get overlooked, you don't think?
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why I answered the question first before, which is that it should get sent out around today to folks, and then we'll debate it tomorrow. We're not debating it at midnight tomorrow. We'll probably be in like 11 or 12. We'll caucus it. We'll make sure we look through all the sections of the bill, and then we will vote on it. So I think that gives everybody plenty of time to look at it.
Okay.
A lot of this stuff isn't going to be new. And there's, again, it's nothing nefarious in this process. It's trying to make sure that we're implementing the parts of the budget.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it, and I apologize if I seem like I'm like relentlessly, I'm trying to understand it. I guess it's like I look at something like the marijuana bill. The reason that the House didn't want to, they delayed the vote essentially, was because they didn't feel like they had enough time to really look at the language of it. So now looking at it.
I don't think that's the case. I think the reason is that there's a group of people who were opposed to the bill, and they tried to use the clock to run it out so it didn't happen. And I think it was important for us to make sure we got it through, which is why we're doing it in a special session.
Okay. So the implementer won't have things like public option back in it, or like the mansion tax, or any of those things. This is strictly
no.
Okay. Okay. Well, Senator Duff, I appreciate you talking to us about this morning, and we know you guys will be back in session tomorrow, it sounds like, with the Senate, so we will check and see what goes on from there. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
So it's been confirmed. The Senate is back tomorrow, the House back on Wednesday, and I'm worried, Senator Wong, about this implementer bill for the budget. Hundreds of pages will be passed in a day by the Senate, and they could have dead or sidelined bills implemented in it, hence implementer. Any idea what could creep back into this and pass this week, Senator Wong?
Well, thank you for having me, Melissa, and thank you for the breaking news that the Senate is going in tomorrow, because that has not been publicly noticed until just in your show this morning. And typically, let me explain how the implementer works. It's at the end of every legislative session, there's a voluminous bill known as the implementer. It contains the policy provisions that are needed to implement the state budget that was bipartisanly supported this year. But unlike most bills, implementers don't go through legislative committees or have public hearings. And some of the provisions in them may be ideas that made the rounds through the various committees. It's a place where party in power, the Democrats, often stuff other amendments ranging from broad policy shifts that didn't make it into legislation or narrow changes that are meant to assist one group or town. But the problem is they have not received a lot of public discussion. And at this moment right now, I have not seen a copy of the voluminous ill implementer to understand this, and I, myself, staffers, and lobbyists are waiting to scour the hundreds of pages to kind of uncover the big and small changes being made.
How many pages do you think this will be, Senator Wong? Ballpark.
Well, that's a problem. I don't know. It could be 500 pages, 300, or even in one case in my years in the legislature, nearly 1,000 pages with hundreds of sections with bills. I remember maybe 5-6 years ago, we had an implementer bill that inserted over 120 bills, legislative bills that either did not pass out of committee or did not pass out of the legislative session of the House and the Senate that were inserted. And the problem is, it's not a selective viewing of each bill. It is one big vote, yay or nay. You don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. If you supported the budget, you're going to support most of the components in there. And we have a term up there in Hartford for these kind of language insertions. They're called rats. It's not very favorable. It's not very pleasant. It isn't intended to be. It really is the rats that get inserted that favors one agenda or not. I'll give you an example.
I was just going to say, so if there are things, let's just say, for example, Senator Huang, because I brought this up to Senator Duff and he shot this down so fast, he couldn't shoot it down fast enough. I said, for example, let's just go with the mansion tax. If that ended up back in the implementer, you guys can't say, hey, I want to amend this. It's either yay or nay. You either are for the budget or not. That's how this works?
That is. It'd be unprecedented to amend that implementer because it impacts the budget, right?
Right, then you can't pass the budget.
It is a big, comprehensive omnibus yay or nay vote. And with such a short time, there really isn't an opportunity to read through all the minutia.
You've got a day. I thought that was crazy. Like, to me, I thought, how do you guys have only a day for the Senate to look through this? And then the House has a day. So in 2 days, we're going to pass something that could be 500 pages? We're going to just pass that? Like, that sounds like lunacy to me.
It is. And what's equally troubling is, I'll paraphrase something that's quoted from House Speaker Matt Ritter. He was very frustrated with the possibility of the long debate of the Republicans that possibly prevented him from raising the marijuana bill. And he said he took that delay as a green light to raise any other number of public policy proposals when the legislature reconvenes on a special session. Ritter, quote, said, because we were not allowed to do business we needed to do today, every item to me is open for consideration with the special session. What that means is the reality, you're already hearing whispers that, you know, the no tax budget that we talked about had a separate bill that now included a tax on highway usage taxes for our trucks. And there is a conversation that the TCI bill, which is the environmental gasoline tax that may be imposed, that did not make it into the budget, that was not considered as a standalone, may now show up into the implementer. But you know, the reality is there are merited bills that die that deserves opportunities to be implemented. But then there are rats that are specific to one interest group or a entity
like what's
that is
it,
not what, in the best interest of public policy.
Like, what's an example of that? Like, what would be a rat to say?
Something benefiting a specific entity or business. An example would be if the TCI. Look, I am supportive of the concept of TCI for environmental long-term climate change policies, but overall the legislative body did not consider it, and the governor did not include that in his tax. Remember the no-tax budget?
Of course, right.
But that could be inserted into this bill. Because the implementer could be fraught with so many of the policy. The
wow.
Mansion tax, any other special legislative policies that did not meet the light of day that could be inserted in there.
Good and public option.
Good or bad. But the problem is we have not seen the bill.
Well, so,
that's
so,
the frustration.
So
and I'm going to be a speed reader, but if it's 1,000 pages,
yeah, what do you
we're
expect?
Going to miss something. And it's going to become law and impact people. And that's the frustration with one-party Democratic control. And it's not just for us as Republicans, Melissa. It is the rank-and-file Democrats who have not seen the light of day in this either. That's the frustration. How are they going to be accountable to the people they represent and say, I voted for this, but I have no idea what's in it?
So my question, Senator Huang, as well is, I mean, do we see implementers in other states, though? So here in Connecticut, obviously, from a Republican standpoint, it's very frustrating, the one-party rule from the Democratic side of this. But are there states that are, let's just say, one-party rule but Republican? Do they also do these implementer bills?
Well, it is a convenient policy sidestepper. And yes, any of these states that could misinterpret the intention. The implementer in its purest form could be a technical diagnostic and nuts and bolts implementation. But what we have seen in the progression in the number of years, and I know Governor Malloy used it to insert languages and legislative shortcuts. So, yes, if other states do use it, and if you have one party control that gets unchecked, then ultimately all bets are off.
And that's what happens.
The frustration. You know, we've seen an unusual legislative session due to COVID-19, and I think state itself has done a great job. But remarkably, the legislative body of this state remains closed to the public. Mm. It is a Zoom world. And during that time, we have passed through some significant landmark passage of bills,
mm-hmm.
the police reform bill, the cleaning records of the incarcerated, the clean slate bill,
mm-hmm.
historical expansion of gambling. We've got zoning law changes that will impact home rule, local zoning control.
Right.
And all of these were done under the guise of a closed, unaccessible legislative session.
Right.
And what it's also wrought, as we've seen, some bad behavior of legislators that have been uncovered. So let's reopen the legislative process. Let's
mm-hmm.
become more transparent. But the implementer is troubling because most people don't even realize it.
Yeah, don't
and
even
we're
know.
We're going to pass out mm-hmm. bills that are going to impact. But unfortunately, they're going to negatively impact. And it really is a disrespect to the democratic process. Bills that died for a reason.
Right, and now we're
going to rewrite the rules and insert these and impact people when they were least prepared and surprised by it.
Well, and Senator Huang, I know that, like I said, the Senate is going to be back in session tomorrow, and I know you're going to be following this very closely, and I'm hoping to get updates on it and just to be able to tell people what is to come of this, certainly after this week. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I can share with you as soon as I get a copy of the bill, I'm happy to share with yourself, Lisa Wexler, and Paul Pacelli for you all to take a look at it and be a better speed reader than the rest of us.
We'll do the best we can. Thanks, Senator Huang. We really appreciate it. And let's head to Fairfield this morning, where First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick is standing by. Good morning, Brenda. How are you?
Morning, Melissa. Did you have a nice holiday Memorial Day weekend?
I did. And I saw you were in the parade. Very exciting to see you back at it. That was really cool.
Yeah. It was great to be back with the community. I think everyone genuinely felt good to be back together.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you're right on the money with that. And I'm hearing, Brenda Kupchick, that the fireworks are coming back to Fairfield, which, I mean, even communities like Westport can't bring theirs back in time. So I think a lot of people are going to be heading to Fairfield, I'm pretty sure, for the 4th of July weekend.
Yeah, so we are a bit concerned.
I would think so.
Yeah, we had a planning meeting because we found out that no one seems to be having fireworks in Fairfield County.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
I'm going to put in my newsletter Friday warning our residents. There's just really no tangible way.
Right. What do you do?
To just restrict it to Fairfield residents only. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming it's going to be quite crowded.
Yeah, when I talked to Jim Marpy in Westport last week, and he said, yeah, we didn't have the time to do it. I think I talked to Mayor Martin in Stamford, and he's like, yeah, we didn't get the permits in time. I thought, oh, no. It's like Fairfield is going to get flooded. I mean, even here in Milford, Milford's not doing 4th of July. They are doing something the weekend before, but I thought, I'm not really hearing anything except for Fairfield at this point. So I just wasn't sure. Well, I mean, people should probably plan ahead of time to park elsewhere and maybe take the bus in for free. I don't know. Like, I don't know what to tell people.
I know. I'm just worried that people are going to be so jammed in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was surprised the other towns didn't do it.
I know for Westport, my understanding was they didn't get the permits in time because they really weren't sure. I guess they had a cutoff date, and at that point, we hadn't even dropped the mandate, and they just weren't sure. I guess I don't know about everywhere else, but it is interesting to me that
right.
Fairfield kind of stands alone. You guys are pretty much the best show in town. You're the only show in town, it seems like. I mean, you guys
yeah.
always put on a good show. Don't kid me. I mean, I always go to the Fairfield fireworks. We never miss it. But I'm like, ooh, I told my parents, I thought maybe this would be the year that we just sit out for a hot second. We just go back next year.
Oh, boy. Well, We'll do the best we can.
That's right. We'll see. We're talking this morning to Brenda Kupchick, the first select woman in Fairfield. Now, on, you know, some other serious things going on, Brenda, you know, this morning we were talking to some of our state senators. The Senate is back in session tomorrow for a special session. The House back on Wednesday. They're going to vote on this implementer bill, which, of course, is to pass through the budget. I'm curious if we could look on like a local level, you know, the budget and even the implementer. What does this mean for a town like Fairfield?
So, you know, as you know, I served in the legislature for 9 years and, you know, the shenanigans.
I love the word shenanigans. Yes, that's a great word. You said it, not me, but I agree with you. Go on.
You know, it's just, you know, the everyday citizen doesn't realize some of the things that happen. And frankly, I don't think they should happen. Mm-hmm. As Senator Wong was saying earlier, you know, people actually, I was impressed that it was a bipartisan budget. I'm in contact with our delegation regularly throughout the session, especially in the last several weeks, just asking about bills that are important to our community. One being allowing, which I've been working on, and I know CCM was, which represents all the small towns, or all the towns actually, is to allow a hybrid model of meetings so that we wanted to learn. I know I wanted us to walk away from this pandemic learning something, knowing, you know, having some knowledge base. So we wanted to be able to have the opportunity to be able to have our members of our boards and commissions vote either in person or virtually. So we've been working really hard with our IT director and our school system to outfit a lot of rooms to be able to have the meetings hybrid, so in person and virtually, not just for the members who are on these commissions and boards, but also for the public. So that was a big, that was an important bill. They threw some other things in the bill that I was a little like, why is that in the bill? Which caused a little bit of a trouble. But that's what Tony was talking about earlier. The implementer, you know, it's a very big document. It implements the budget. It has a lot of language in it. And as you learn when you're a legislator, language really matters. You know, shall and may are very different words. So if you have a bill that says may, you know, or you have a bill that says shall. So these are the kinds of things that legislators have to really be careful. And this is where the research staff and the legislative attorneys of the caucuses really come into play, because honestly, you have no idea. Like, right? So Tony is saying that he's going to go up there tomorrow. There's a very large implementer bill. And right now, the research staff of those caucuses are looking at those, that language really closely to try to find, to make sure that there's nothing in there that that's not what they think should be in there. So, you know, it could impact our towns. Like, that's why we're all, you know, small leaders are leaders of towns. We want to know what's in it.
Right.
You know, we want to know if there's a mandate in there now in our town that could cost us a lot of money, or if we're losing something. So it's just, it's not, I don't feel, productive way to do things, because, you know, everybody, both sides of the aisle, right? Like Senator Wong was saying, even the rank and file members of the majority party, they want to know what's in the bill.
Right.
I mean, you want to know what you're voting on. I don't envy them. I served 9 years up there, and it could be a very frustrating process.
Continuing our conversation with the voting going on this week, the implementer and the budget in general, without knowing what's in the implementer at this point, Brenda, is there anything in particular you are concerned about for your residents?
Well, like I said, Melissa, that's the thing about these bills. The implementer is a giant aircraft carrying bill, and it has language that implements every line of the budget and how each line will be delivered. So when there's things in there that don't have anything to do with the budget, and that's happened in the past many times, you know, it could have far-reaching effects on the towns. So that's why leaders of each of our towns are in contact with their delegation regularly to ask them, you know, watch out for us. Make sure that we're not going to get hit with something that we have no idea is going to happen.
I mean, as soon as the implementer becomes, I'll say, public knowledge, as in these lawmakers get a hold on it, and are they going to share it with you? Like, will you be able to see a copy of the document as early as today?
Right, but yes, it'll be posted online. But the problem is, I'm like myself and any other leader in town, don't have time to read 500 pages.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
Implementer bill. And we're not lawyers, so some of us aren't. And so, again, that's the responsibility of the legislature to pass responsible legislation and to keep people updated, especially leaders of towns.
We're talking this morning to Brenda Kupchick, the first elect woman of course, Fairfield. And, Fairfield was one of the, I don't want to say first towns, but it was one of the leading towns in Fairfield County that decided to start pulling back on the mask mandates in schools and in town and everything. And there was, of course, a lot of trepidation from families and things like that. But you guys pushed through and did very well kind of rounding out the school year. I know it's coming to a close soon. Any ideas what the fall is going to look like for you? Have those discussions started?
So I think what's happened, and I know our parents, a lot of our parents were concerned and upset. We're sending a lot of emails last week, was all the superintendents, including ours in Fairfield, had to send out, had to send a plan to the federal government. It's just a requirement for funding that school districts have a plan to reopen their schools in the fall. So like one of the requirements in that plan is a detailed mitigation strategy. Mm-hmm. So I think all of the school districts, including ours, sent out an email, and they probably should have been more clear with parents when they sent it out, that this is just a plan that has to be submitted to the federal government. It can and will be modified over the summer, because things will obviously change over the summer. And rates, I'm assuming, will go down. So a lot of parents got very concerned that their children are going to have to be in masks. And frankly, listen, we can all have different degrees of thoughts on this. But right now, it says that if you're unvaccinated, you should wear a mask, right? Mm-hmm. And kids under 12 aren't vaccinated,
right.
Can't be vaccinated. But again, look at it. Young people, young children are not getting the virus. Mm-hmm. And if they do get it, there's a very low impact to them. So, it's hot in these schools. It was really hot last week. We had, record-breaking numbers. And we had young children with masks on in school and on buses. Mm-hmm. And it was hot, really, really hot. And that's unhealthy as well.
Exactly,
for these kids. So I think parents got concerned, thinking that because our school district, like other ones, had to submit this mitigation plan to the federal government, that was set in stone. And so I know our superintendent had to reply to a lot of parents saying, hey, that's not set in stone. Mm-hmm. There's going to be changes over the summer based on the guidelines. So listen, we're all in a really precarious situation. You don't want to go against CDC guidelines. You don't want to go against sector rules from the state of Connecticut. So I'm going to actually reach out to the governor this week and tell him that we are concerned. I am concerned, or my community is concerned, about mandating masks in the fall, because we need more information, because these kids, it's hard to breathe with those masks on, so then that brings a whole other thing into it. So I tell parents to take a deep breath,
right,
and let's see what happens over the summer.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true.
Conversation open. That's all.
I think you're right, Brenda. And I think the other thing too is it's hard when, look, it was easy when we all universally had to wear masks. I know for my son, who's 3, as soon as he sees my husband and I walk anywhere without our masks because we're fully vaccinated, he's like,
right.
I'm bailing on this. And it's like, it's hard to tell your elementary school kids, hey, listen, your teachers may not have to wear them because they got, but you didn't have that opportunity. So you're staying in a mask. Like, they're going to be like, what gives? I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this.
Right.
So that's tough too. That's tricky.
And again, kids don't get it to the degree. So listen, there's a lot of variables. There are children with, underlying health conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot in this mix. And so parents get very emotional, and I get that.
Yeah.
I get it. And I try to just tell them, just take a deep breath. Let's talk this through and let's figure out something over the summer and look at the guidelines as they come down.
First Elect Woman Brenda Kupchick of Fairfield, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again really soon.
All right. Take care, Melissa.
Thank you. You too.
Lieutenant Jim Perez, Fairfield Police Department. Crime on the mind. Melissa in the Morning. WICC 600.
Oh boy, Lieutenant Jim Perez, I do not envy you in a couple of weeks. How in the world are you guys going to manage 4th of July weekend being the only, really the only place in our area, in Fairfield County at least, that's going to be hosting the fireworks?
I think it's going to be quite an incredible challenge. And I think that what happens and what people need to understand is that when you start getting that many people crowded into an area, it can be quite a problem.
Yeah.
I remember in 2018, I presented a class at Yale University on target hardening and crowd control. And some of the things we talked about was you know, crowd output, which is a term that's not really used, but that is so like, you know, it's like it's relevant, you mm-hmm. know. And so
what does it mean? What does that mean, Jim?
Crowd output is the number of people that you could safely move through an area.
Gotcha.
There was because what happened was years ago, there was a Dr. John Fruin, who was a pedestrian specialist. Mm-hmm. Believe me, there's such a thing. And what he decided was that, you know, there could be this critical crowd density. And so, you know, critical crowd density is established when you have 5.38 square feet of or less of people gathered. So when people are gathered in a 3-square-foot area, you start getting involuntary contact with each other and brushing. And then when you get polarization of the crowd, if something were to happen and everybody started to panic and run, this is where you start getting that polarization where things can go wrong. Now, are there ways around it? Yes. Have we done fireworks in the past with a lot of people? Of course we have. I mean, we used to deal with 5,000 kids coming in for Clam Jam every year from all over the country.
True.
I mean,
yes, that was a disaster. Good Lord.
Yeah, we've dealt with it, but I'm telling you that listen, I'm not talking about us specifically, but any community, if you don't look at critical crowd density and you don't understand it, you can run into some major issues that results in major liability for many years to come. And I don't think that liability should keep us from enjoying ourselves. I applaud the town in this way. Ready? We are the only ones that are providing something mm-hmm. where other towns, through their lame excuses, I'm sorry, you know, that say that, you know, they didn't get it in time. I mean, for God's sakes, you're in charge. But anyway, that's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're not that we're actually doing it, I think people should understand that we're being gracious and that we're being generous. And I think that people should respect, because of that, they should respect when they come into Fairfield mm-hmm. to actually go to the fireworks.
Or, you know, I have to be honest, Lieutenant Perez. So we have friends who live right on the beach. And I have to say, every single year, they always have a party and we always have parking there and stuff. I have to be honest, like our family, and I'm not looking for credit here, but like our family decided we're not going this year. And it's not because we're afraid. All of us are vaccinated, actually, but because, my God, you know that it's going to be more miserable than it is exciting when you've got people not just coming from Fairfield. You're talking, I'm sorry, we're going to have people as far as like Stamford coming up. You're going to have people as far up as like Milford and Orange coming down. I mean, you're the only show in town. I have to imagine you guys are going to be so overcrowded, like beyond anything you've ever seen before coming off the pandemic.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, but I think that every town should be sending some police officers to help out.
That's what I was going to ask. Are you guys bringing in other departments, Lieutenant Perez? I would hope so. That's so much for you guys.
Yeah, listen, I'm not part of the emergency management team. I have no idea what is being talked about. I have no idea what's being done. But I have to assume that we do have good people in place that are actually answering these questions. Because you got to talk about planning, crowds, mental condition of crowds, crowd throughput. Output, like we talked about, terrorism.
I was just going to say, sorry, the big thing for me, Lieutenant Perez, is to me, you're talking about you're going to have tens of thousands, maybe more, in one very general area. That screams target. I'm sorry. That just screams a target for me, well, from a reporter standpoint. Like, that's scary for me.
Listen, you have to look at this. And we can't hide from everything, okay?
No,
but
of
you
course
have to
not.
Look at this. When you're talking about putting people at 3 square feet or less in contact with each other, that's called, right there alone, that's called critical crowd density. And that can be an issue. And you know what? There are experts out there that will fight for it. And they'll say that, yes, that's in fact true. And I'm not sure. Listen, I hate to be like a downer because, you know what? We're doing something really nice.
I agree.
And I think that people have to respect that we're the only community that's standing up. So I expect that people will behave appropriately and that they're not going to kind of get, because we don't have to do this. I mean, this is kind of nice that we're actually putting it on, and I'm proud that it's the town that's doing it. However, with the same breath, I will say that we need to be careful because liability looms large here. And when we're the only one doing it, you know, I don't know. Who knows? I don't know. I think we're doing the right thing, but
yeah. And here's the thing: is I don't want anyone to get confused that you or I are against it. We're not. Like Lieutenant Perez said, I think it's a beautiful thing that Fairfield is offering to have the fireworks. Unfortunately, if you don't say all of the what ifs or you don't say all of the issues that come with it, people are going to be jerks. I'm sorry, people are going to be jerks, and they're going to take advantage and they ruin a good thing for other people. So that's why we're saying it. So I'm curious, Lieutenant Perez. You know, we're only weeks away from this thing. And unfortunately, historically, like many other beach towns, Fairfield has struggled with crowd control with the fireworks. So I'm curious, do you start capping it out? Do you start kicking people out once they start walking down? Hey, it's looking like it's getting too full on the beaches. I'm sorry, you can't come past this street. What do you do? I just think this is a recipe for disaster. I don't know.
Listen, we do. I'll tell
you, I don't know. I'm asking you.
No. Listen, I'm going to tell you this. We do have a very professional police department. I know that all of our officers have done this before. They are ready and capable of doing it. And it's not a matter of the you know, whether our officers can do it or not. Of course we can do it. We've dealt with a lot of other stuff. However, when we're the only show in town, which I don't think we've ever had this,
right.
I don't think so either.
In
recent memory, 29 years, I can't think of a time where we were the only ones doing this. I think that presents a special consideration, and I think that we need to kind of, you know, make sure that our emergency management team is equipped with all the latest technology, with all the latest products, so that we can actually keep people safe, because the police department can only do so much. And then, you know, that's all we can do. And our police department is phenomenal at dealing with crowds and ushering in traffic, whether it's vehicular or pedestrian back and forth. I mean, we're very good at it. We've done it for a long time. But, I mean, I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
Well, if there are any other officers or anybody in a different town you were thinking, maybe I'm going to go and enjoy the fireworks in Fairfield, maybe you should talk to your police department and ask if they would lend a helping hand. Because, good Lord, I just think you're right. I think Fairfield's got an incredible department, but my God, do you have your work cut out for you? I think as enjoyable and as exciting as it is, the newsie in me is like, oh, boy.
Listen, we have to think positive too. I mean,
totally.
I think that, you know, we're offering something that no one else is offering, and that's the beauty of our community. And we've done that in other areas. We've done it in giving. You know, Fairfield, I will tell you this, we are a very good model of how to be as a community as a whole, because I think there's a lot of things that happen in town that people don't even realize, you know, including our giving, you know, to the poor and our giving to, you know, and just doing all that kind of stuff. We are very good at it. And it sometimes surprises me when I start hearing some of the things that are being done through town. And this is just another example of that. So hopefully, you know, things will go great. It'll just be an event and we'll learn from it. But I think in the future, we need to kind of sit down and really nail down and talk about crowd density and critical crowd mass and all these things, because that's a science out there, and courts are going to rely on it, because that's just the way it is. We're a litigation kind of based, you know, system, and it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. And so we need to kind of take every step possible to make sure that everyone is safe. And when you said about capping crowds, I don't, you know, listen, we have five beaches.
Right. I don't know.
People are going to crowd all over the place. So how do you actually, you know, how do you control that? Well, we do an excellent job with vehicle traffic.
Yeah. No, I know you're stumping me. I don't know, Lieutenant Perez. I mean, I definitely think, like you said, I think you go off a hope and a prayer, good vibes. And after this year, gosh, I hope you are going to be front and center for every other event as the crime prevention expert here in Connecticut. I would hope that they have you weigh in on these conversations. So I thank you for at least weighing in here on WICC 600. And sure. I'm praying for you guys.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem. Lieutenant Jim Perez here on WICC.